Finding Our Way is supported by Berghaus. For a long time, Berghaus Kit has helped people access and enjoy outdoor experiences, and we are delighted to have them as partners for this podcast. Just a heads up, this episode involves a conversation about discrimination linked to homophobia. For more detailed information, go and have a look at the episode description. Hello and welcome to Finding Our Way, the new podcast from the British Mountaineering Council, or the BMC. I'm Marianne O'Hotter.
And I'm Cress Allwood. This podcast is about diversifying the voices we normally hear talking about the outdoors. So in each episode, we'll be chatting to someone who's usually busy climbing, mountaineering or walking.
And instead, we're going to grill them about the highs, the lows and the most surprising things they've learned from their adventures. So expect good chat, memorable stories and bursts of inspiration from people who are actually making real change happen.
So Marianne, who's on today?
Okay, joining us today is a man who is by day a senior manager in local government for Redcar and Cleveland Council. And he recently went part-time so that he could spend more time exploring Scotland, the lakes and more. He is a huge advocate for the power of supportive outdoor communities at all times. He's a mountain, camping and hostels event leader for Outdoor Lads, a UK-wide community who run a range of sociable outdoor activities for gay, bi and trans guys. He says that Outdoor Lads is all about getting out more. Connecting with us from the North York Moors, welcome Rob Mitchell. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, to be with you. Hi.
Thank you for joining us today, Rob. So if we start off, can you tell us, Outdoor Lads, what's this all about?
Well, Outdoor Lads, it started back in 2006, and it was born out of a group of gay guys in Manchester who were socialising in, you know, gay bars, the gay scene, but they had a shared passion for the outdoors and they wanted to do something different. So they decided they'd organise a camping weekend away and let it be known locally through local press, whatever it was, to encourage other people to come and join them, get away from the gay scene and enjoy the outdoors for the weekend. And that's how Outdoor Lads was born. As it happened, it was the very first weekend of February and they were camping in the Lake District at Langdale. So a very wintry scene all round. But that's become an iconic annual event, our winter camp every winter, beginning of February, to mark the anniversary of the birth of Outdoor Lads. And since then, the group has grown. We've gone up to having a couple of thousand members or so right across the UK, even some members elsewhere in Europe. And the whole raft of activities for the group, not just camping, but walking, mountain walking, climbing, bouldering, canoeing, hosteling, wild camping, fell running, mountain biking, road biking, and even skiing, going into the Alps from time to time. And there are, you know, longer distance hikes like to Everest Base Camp, even, would you believe, we've done stuff like that. So it really has grown in that time since 2006.
Were you part of that original 2006 group, or did you join at some point later, Rob?
Alas, no. I used to live in Manchester, but no, I wasn't part of that group then. I found out about it in 2008 just through a friend who heard of it, and I found it online and signed up, found a walk locally and joined. So I've been an active member since 2008 and was so inspired by the people in the group that I thought, well, I could lead walks like this. So I started leading walks here in the North York Moors, and then I was following Outdoor Lads into more wild landscapes like the, you know, the Lake District, and then eventually venturing up into Scotland. And it's broadened my horizons immensely. So from not knowing Scottish mountains at all, you know, I now consider the Highlands, the West Highlands, you know, to be my second home, all thanks to the stuff with Outdoor Lads. And as a result of that, I've boosted my confidence, my skills, done various training courses. I'm hoping to become, or to complete, my summer ML qualification in about 3 weeks' time, because I missed out on a couple of categories when I first did it a couple of years back. So I'm going back to hopefully knock those two on the head and be a fully qualified summer ML.
So ML is mountain leader.
Mountain leader, yeah, of course, which is obviously, you know, all down to Outdoor Lads, to be honest, inspiring me to get out more, to push myself, to enjoy and to be a bit adventurous. So it's fantastic.
That's great to hear, Rob, because doing your ML is quite an undertaking.
Yeah, I never set out to do anything like this, at all. I mean, I think my passion for something like that was really triggered by being on top of Great Gable on a very misty day in November on an Outdoor Lads event. And you couldn't see a thing. It was really thick mist. And the guy that was leading it, a chap called John Cornley, he said to me, "Oh, Rob, see if you can find the way off, the route off." So I was looking around, fumbling around in the thick fog. I couldn't find the way off at all. And then he got his compass out and his map, lined the two up, and then bang, straight away, there's the route down. And that's when I thought, I need to learn to do that. As it happened, that same guy was running a navigation course through Outdoor Lads a couple of months later. So I signed up, and that has been the trigger for me to just go on and on and on. And it's been wonderful.
I love that a map and a compass are the kind of tools to freedom in some way.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've always been pretty au fait with maps. I mean, I even used to navigate on family holidays at about, 6 or 7 years old to get us down to Devon and Cornwall with a road map. So I've always been very, very comfortable with maps and especially OS maps. And I've always been broadly familiar with a compass, but never really known how to use it properly until about 10 years ago on that mountaintop with John, and then on the training course a couple of months later up in the Coniston Fells on a snowy February weekend, learning to micro nav, navigation in the dark, that kind of stuff. And when things come together, when you're aiming for something in the dark and you're pacing yourself, when you find it, what you're looking for in pitch black, wow, that, I know it sounds bonkers, but that feels fantastic. So it just gives you the confidence to know that, remember those basics, remember those skills. And even if the weather turns for the worse and you can't see more than 10 meters in front of your nose, you can get a group off a mountaintop fairly safely.
I absolutely concur with that. And, if you put the time and commitment in, there's absolutely no reason why, all our listeners, if they want to improve their navigation, couldn't achieve, don't have to do their ML, but, navigation skills courses. And even if they're, using other technologies as well, in addition to the map and compass, I guess, nowadays.
To me, maps, they're my artwork. You can look at a map and see the beauty of the landscape in what's on that sheet of paper. You can look at it and envisage what it is on the ground. The contours tell a story. The streams tell a story. The plateaus tell a story. It's, being able to look at a map like that and interpret it in your mind and think that's what it's going to look like. And that's good. And it takes time to, you've got to be very familiar with OS maps to be able to do that. But that's the kind of thing that just builds up over time.
Brilliant. Now, Rob, a question that I'm sure is not the first time you've been asked. But when we look at Outdoor Lads, so it's for gay, bi and trans men, do you face the accusation that that's divisive? Or why do you need a special club for those people?
I would argue that it's not divisive. I think as human beings, we all need to form groups. We all need to feel a sense of belonging and a sense of community. Some people get that through their local school, mothers, fathers, the connections through school. Some people get it through the church. Some people get it through all sorts of different avenues. But we do need to feel part of a group. Outdoor Lads, we are just that, part of a group that is set up by and is intended for gay men. That's not to say others can't join. In fact, it would be unlawful for us to say you cannot join our group because you're a woman. Absolutely unlawful, and nor would we want to. But I think it opens the door for people to think, well, if Outdoor Lads can do it for gay men, so-and-so could do it for lesbians or for people with disabilities or for the BME community or for anything else. I mean, there are groups that are set up for, geographical areas. You might hear the Birmingham Walking Group or something, just made that up off the top of my head. That's a geographical community. There are communities of interest of human beings, and it's simply around that. It's not about divisive. It's recognizing that there are groupings that are absolutely fine within that broader family, and especially if it helps people to get outdoors as well. If it encourages more people to get outdoors, then that's got to be a good thing.
And that perhaps leads us on to the question, or shall I say problem, of language and acronyms, because, LGBTQI+, etc. What's your view on some of these labels, Rob? Are they helpful or not?
It can be a bit of both, to be honest. Language is absolutely critical, of course. It's our number one means of communication, however it's done, you know, verbal, written, you know, whatever. It is incredibly powerful. So we've got to get it right. If we use language that's straight away putting barriers up, we've got a problem. So whether it's the written language or the verbal language, by saying that we are welcoming for, you know, people from all sorts of different backgrounds, it's important to get that across. So phrases like LGBTQI plus can have their advantages, because if somebody identifies with the I or the T, or even aware that they might be part of the plus at the end of it, at least there's a smidgen of something there that suggests, actually, this could be good for me. So there is an importance there. There is a, in my own mind, I do struggle sometimes that list of abbreviations is getting longer and longer. When I first came out in the 80s, at the end of my student days, you know, I was coming out as a gay man, struggled, you know, as a youngster, a teenager from a background with no positive role models whatsoever. Margaret Thatcher was in power, so Clause 28, all of those things, for anybody that remembers that far back. It was fairly right-wing and a tough time for growing up gay. And eventually when I did it, I thought, yeah, I'm coming out as a gay man. And at the time, all of the kinds of groups that were there to support were called lesbian and gay, da-da-da-da-da, whatever it was, lesbian and gay switchboard, lesbian and gay support group. And I was thinking, well, hang on, I'm coming out as a gay man, not as a lesbian and gay man. But that was just one of those things. That was my identity at the time. But of course, you soon realize, of course, the oppression and the difficulties that people face are very, very similar. So there's a good reason for grouping people together. And, you know, if there's anything, especially when you're facing oppression, you need people to work together to fight oppression. There's no point, you know, just the gay community, gay male community having one agenda, the lesbian community having another agenda. It's the, you know, you have to work together. And that's what we found in the, you know, the 80s and 90s, as thankfully so many social and legal changes occurred. But again, it comes back to the point that the language we use is important. We've also got to back that up with actions and meaning, and genuinely try and get to grips with those things, because that way, you know, we open the door for you know, so many more people to come and, you know, join us, and we can be inclusive, and everybody can have a hopefully a great time together.
Yeah, and feel welcome and valued.
Rob, do you think things have changed? Is it easier being a gay man now, or coming out now?
I would say it probably is. Obviously, from my own experience, you only come out once. And I came out in the late 80s, and that was hard. What I hear from people, younger people that have, you know, have gone through that similar journey in the late 90s and now the, you know, the first couple of decades of the 20th century, it does seem to be much, much easier, which is great. There are, I think, still some issues, though. I think when you think about it, heterosexuals don't have to come out as straight and fear what the reaction might be to people that aren't keen on heterosexuals. That's just not something that heterosexual people ever have to countenance. Gay people grow up thinking, oh God, I'm going to have to come out, unless they're really, really lucky and grow up in the most supportive environments and never, you know, come across any negativity in their school days or whatever. So I often liken it to things like crime and the fear of crime. There's much more fear of crime. Loads of people fear crime, even if they've never experienced it. So it's that kind of fear of coming out is bigger than the reality, is what I've sort of seen myself in recent years. So I think it is getting easier, but as a group, and I think, again, groups like Outdoor Lads, really important there. If somebody's feeling particularly vulnerable because they really want to come out to their family, but if their family reject them, what happens then? If they've got a big network of friends that they've managed to build up through Outdoor Lads or any other means, you've got that kind of cushion behind you, people that will support you, whether it's a good journey, whether it's a bad journey, or just a downright ordinary journey, you've got people there to support you. So I think it is easier now than it used to be. Attitudes have changed. I mean, you know, gay marriage has been around a few years now and seems as normal as anything. You know, I couldn't have imagined that when I was coming out. So what a change. Still a long way to go, but what a change. And we've got to fight to hold on to those changes as well.
So what advice would you give to clubs to encourage greater inclusion?
I think any club can think long and hard about the messages it sends out in terms of all sorts of things. First of all, it's, you know, if it has its own, you know, aims and ambitions, making that clear. And, you know, do the aims of the group, are they inclusive? Does the wording of anything on their website suggest we are for this particular type of person only? But also things like the imagery that you use, because most groups now are based on the, you know, internet, you can access electronic means. So does the imagery on the website suggest inclusion, or is it all just, you know, grey haired, aging white people? You know, we can't sort of make things up, but let's try and make sure that whatever we do to communicate with the outside world, that the groups are accessible to other people, and make it clear that there are different types of events that will be inclusive. Not everybody wants to go on a, you know, 25 mile hike in 18 hours over, you know, half a dozen different Munro summits in Scotland. Some people like to do something a bit more casual. So making sure you've got different types of events, different levels of abilities, can actually be very inclusive as well. So you're not just narrowing it down to a limited number of people that are already very experienced of being out and about in the hills, because that in itself is, well, you could almost argue it's indirect discrimination, because there are lots of people out there that need introducing to the hills and will be put off by a big challenging event. So there's loads of opportunities out there for groups just to think about what it might look like to other people, the messages that they're sending out.
I've been quite struck by looking at the Outdoor Lads website and the social media that it sort of feels so welcoming to people who might be nervous. They might not have done much stuff outdoors. So it says, for example, that leaders will know who's on their first event and make a special effort to make you feel welcome. And that the four values of Outdoor Lads are friendly and welcoming, fun, adventurous and professional. Love that. I mean, that kind of makes me want to join.
There's no mention of conquering mountains. You know, it's absolutely really inviting.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a number of things in response to that. Yes, the values you mentioned there, they're absolutely central to what we do. The thing about being friendly and welcoming, especially for new members, as a leader, all leaders, when people sign up for an event, it's on the Outdoor Lads website. So I'm leading an event on Monday. I can see who's coming and I can see how many events they've done. So I can tell if they've been around for years because they've done 100 or more events, or if there's a big fat zero next to their name, then that means they are new and that will be their very first experience of Outdoor Lads. So it's essential that we make sure that people who are new feel straight away part of a wider community. So it's about welcoming them. Sometimes I'll send them a message in advance to say, really looking forward to meeting you. We're a really good group, blah, 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 just to try and reassure them in advance and remind them, you know, where to meet and what kit to bring, that kind of thing. But it's also on the day introducing newcomers to other members of the group, making sure they feel part of it. I suppose it's part of your leadership qualities as well. As you're going round on a particular walk, making sure that that new person isn't walking alone. You could have a group of 20 or 30 of you, but you want to make sure that that new person is chatting. And when you can see them, you know, clicking with other people, and you can see smiling, laughter, that kind of thing, you think, yeah, that's fantastic. That really is what we're about. We pride ourselves as a group on being welcoming and inclusive, to try and make sure anybody and everybody feels valued. But the other values that we have, I mean, things like fun. We want Outdoor Lads to be fun. We want people to have a great time. Some people have a great time by pushing themselves to the limit and walking for hours and hours and hours in driving rain just to get to a summit, even though you can't see a thing from the summit, and you come back down, you know, cold, wet and happy. There are other people that would hate that, and their idea of fun is a nice gentle walk on a canal towpath with a really warm tea room at the end, and go and have cake and coffee for 4 hours as well. Fun means lots of different things to different people. We try to make sure everything is fun. And especially when you get to things like weekend events, we pride ourselves on things like hostel weekends. So we'll book an entire youth hostel for sole use. And the first night is always the classic Outdoor Lads buffet. Everybody's asked to bring some food to share. And it's a great social event, really nice way to meet people, make people feel welcome. You're sharing each other's food, a lot of which is homemade. They're great fun. They really are. adventurous. We're very keen on making sure people get lots of new experiences. So the sheer list of types of activities that people can get involved in, we hope will inspire people to try something new. And I know what it's like when I've taken people up their first Monroe, and you know their reaction to having achieved something they never thought they would have done is hugely satisfying to me. And you can see what an achievement it is in their own expressions on the face when they get to the summit. You can say, "Oh, welcome to the top of Ben, blah blah blah." This is a Monroe, and you can see them. Wow, you know. So it's that sense of adventure as well. It doesn't have to be about dangling on a piece of rope off a cliff. Adventure comes in many, many different forms, and that's part of it. But I think underpinning all of that is the professional bit. We do have professional standards, so we follow BMC guidelines. We're affiliated to BMC. We're also affiliated to Sport England. We follow various guidelines around making sure our leaders are suitably experienced and trained in different skills. You can't become a mountain leader until you've passed at least two assessments with other experienced mountain leaders in the group. You've got your outdoor first aid qualification lined up, and you've got a reasonable sort of history of leading mountain walks. So you come with a level of experience. So there's all that kind of professional background to it. We have a training budget as a group. So we are always encouraging people to undergo training, whether it's formal or informal. So it's supporting people through professional qualifications, like the Summer ML, or indeed the Hill and Moorland walking qualifications, navigation qualifications, all sorts of things. So professionalism does underpin it, even though we're all volunteers.
Tell us a bit about what walking means to you. What place does it have in your life?
For me, it's been a part of my life for just about all my life. And I think my original passion for the outdoors, if I'm honest, is thanks to my mum and dad. Now, they weren't great hill walkers or hikers or anything like that at all, but I was born and brought up in the Fens. Pick a map up down there, see if you can find a contour in the first half an hour. You'll be very lucky indeed. But we used to go on holiday to places like Devon and Cornwall, to Exmoor, Dartmoor, all around the Cornish coast, up into Scotland, a couple of holidays up there. And that really introduced me to a three-dimensional landscape. And I absolutely loved it. So I fell very much out of love with the Fens when I was, born and brought up, and loved those family holidays. We didn't have much money as a family. So we always used to go camping. At the time, I thought that was a really obvious statement about a poor family that couldn't afford to do anything else. Because friends at school were just going on like Spanish package tour holidays, and I thought, wow, that's really posh. Why can't we do that? No, we can't afford it. Looking back, would I have changed that for £1 million? Absolutely not. I got so much out of those holidays that's still with me. So that's absolutely where my passion comes from. We never really went up big hills or certainly not a mountain as a family. But it was just the walking thing. And I think even then I can remember my dad sort of saying, "Oh, we'll just go to the top of this hill and see what we can see." And I'd sort of tag along. And it's that sense of achievement of getting somewhere that you set out to get to. And you get to the top of a hill, you feel satisfied that you've done it, the sense of achievement. And the view that you would usually get, being able to see and feel like you're on top of the world, that can be your local tiny hill, even in the centre of your municipal park. Or it could be, one of the UK's, finest mountain summits. You can still get that sense of achievement. So that's really where my passion for the outdoors has come. So I've always, always loved walking, and perfect for switching off. I've throughout my career in local government, it's been pretty demanding at times, as most people's are. Being outdoors allows you to switch off from all of the stuff, the pressures at work, deadlines that are coming up. All those kinds of things that can keep you awake at night. When you can put your boots on and disappear, I find I can switch off from that. So that to me has been absolutely vital to my mental well-being for many, many years as well. So as well as enjoying it for itself, a great way of switching off. And again, if you're out leading a group, your focus is on making sure they have a great day out, keeping everybody safe. Clearly you don't want any, broken limbs, people falling over and down a cliff edge or something. So you're focused on doing stuff like that. You can really, really switch off and focus on great things. And I think one of the good things as well, we often worry about far too many things. Being out in the wilderness, especially on your own, you can feel so insignificant. You know, things that felt so really, really important and worrying when you're at home feel like nothing when you're out in the middle of the, you know, the Scottish wilds on your own, wild camping or something. And it's a great way to forget all of that, recharge your mental batteries, as well as exercise your physical ones.
Yeah, that's so great to hear, Rob. And what I'm hearing there for you, and certainly resonates with me, I'm not sure about you, Marianne, is that need to balance the responsibility of being a leader in the outdoors and all that goes with that when you're, you know, making sure that everyone else is having a good time, with perhaps that personal need for connection with nature and the outdoors, which is perhaps a different type of cathartic release.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. I think you've summed it up really, you know, really well. I couldn't sum it up any better. You do need that balance in your life, full stop. I mean, some people get that balance from all sorts of different interests. You know, for many of us, it's the outdoors. For other people, it's all sorts of other passions. If they've just got one interest in their life, just work or just something, it's not a very rich life. Our lives doing this kind of stuff are thankfully really pretty rich.
Do you sometimes find, Rob, within a group that you're leading, people feeling that release, finding that they feel like they're in a safe space, a supportive community, actually brings mental health issues up, and you're on the hill keeping a group safe, but also going, oh, hang on a minute, this person's going through something that we need to support them for?
Yeah, that does happen quite a lot. I mean, you know, when you're out all day with a group, you have conversations about 1,001 different subjects, and invariably issues related to mental health come up. It's not very often somebody would say to you, oh, by the way, I've got a mental health issue I want to share with you. But it's clear, you know, things like that can emerge. People start to talk about, you know, the worries they've got or whatever. And just through conversation, and it's not about thinking, oh, my God, this is a mental health challenge. How do I deal with it as a leader? It's really about being normal and how you would be if you were out with a friend that was talking and started to talk about something difficult. You'd listen, you'd have a chat, you'd ask them, you know, questions to try and unpick it, to help them find solutions. It's not, you know, it's not an absolute art. It's the kind of thing you would do not just as a leader, but just as somebody that you're there with. I suppose as a leader, what you would want to make sure is that the whole group follows the kind of ethos of, you know, being, you know, welcoming, supporting, blah, 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 and that would follow through. I mean, there have been some examples where, having come back from events, I've heard people say, joining Outdoor Lads, going on this walk has been far better than any antidepressants I've ever been on. So, you know, little nuggets like that, you think, bloody hell, that's powerful. That really, really is good. So if the NHS and government could put on prescription going outdoors sometimes for days at a time to really, really get to grips with your, I suppose, your soul, your inner self, whatever it might be, that might save billions in drug costs. Who knows?
There is a movement towards that, isn't there, where it's, what do they call it? It's social prescribing.
Social prescription, Yeah.
And exercise on prescription as well. Yeah. And I think that has been tried in small areas and probably shown to work, but it's not yet taken off. But it is the kind of thing that really should be pushed. You know, there's maybe all GPs ought to be given a list of all the outdoor groups across the whole of the UK, whatever they are. And then they can perhaps say, you know, join this group for a couple of months and then come back and see me and see how you're feeling.
Maybe we need to take the GPs out. And then they'd be like, oh, I realise the power of this medicine. Oh, everybody needs
Absolutely.
This special medicine.
Yeah. Good idea. I'm just thinking the GPs I've had, whether all of them would actually manage to get outdoors. But I think they would. I think most of them would. We might start with the canal toe path and then work upwards.
And the coffee and cake. I mean, that sounds great. Yeah.
Rob, what have been your highlights so far with Outdoor Lads?
Oh, blimey. Highlight. I mean, to be honest, there's so many highlights that, you know, I could witter on for hours. I mean, there's a number of them. I suppose for me personally, it's that sudden realization I can get out and explore, and I've discovered so much of the UK's upland landscapes that I'd never even dreamt of visiting until I joined Outdoor Lads. Gave me the confidence, the skills, and so on to go on and do that. I think specific highlights when I look back. So, for example, one New Year's Day, probably about 8 years ago, one of our Hogmanay events. We always have a really good Hogmanay event, obviously New Year time up in Scotland. And on this particular New Year's Day, we decided to go up Sheehalion. Really snowy in places, struggled a bit to make sure we got to the top safely, but you know, we did through a circuitous route. But it was a cloud inversion. You get to the top and the peak was just sticking out from the top. But as we emerged, we got the most amazing Brocken spectres. Now, I don't think any of us on the group had ever experienced a Brocken spectre before. So to see them that particular day, a cloud inversion, having got to the summit of Sheehalion on New Year's Day, was just one of those memories that will always be with me. So it's things like that that you hold dear. That was a highlight. Also, things like visiting some of the remotest youth hostels in Britain is just amazing. So places like Black Sail in the Lake District are clearly magical. Skidder House, it's one of my favourites. You know, the hiking, the sense of adventure even before you get there is palpable. So you're not driving your car to the front door. You know, you're having to hike there against the elements. And then up in, you know, even in Scotland, Lochossian Hostel is one of my favourites. Getting off the train at Curragh Station, hiking across the edge of Rannoch Moor to get to Lochossian Hostel right by the shores of the Loch. Wow. I was there a couple of years ago in October. The deer were rutting. It was a still time. Very little wind. You could hear the stags bellowing from miles away. It was just a wonderful experience. And then, of course, Glen Affric Hostel up in the far northwest, an 8 mile walk in from the nearest place you can leave your car, surrounded by some of the most stunning mountain landscapes in Britain. What an amazing place to be. You know, there's so many highlights like that. Highlights even when I've done, made up my own coast to coast route across England, obviously inspired by Wainwright. So I made up my own route from the west coast of Cumbria and ended up on Holy Island in Northumberland, and over the course of about 12 days, and felt a huge sense of achievement. And one of my ambitions is to do something similar in Scotland, to pick a route from the most westerly point of the Scottish mainland to the most easterly. So close to Ardnamurchan Point, which you hear on the shipping forecast.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
Across to Peterhead and taking all the 4,000 foot summits of Scotland en route as well. So that's one of my ambitions to do before I get too old to manage such things, but hopefully another 20 years yet at least.
Rob, for listeners who are feeling inspired by the passion, the energy, by the obvious impact that Outdoor Lads has had within its community, for people who kind of go, I want to do something like that for people in my community or my peers, what would be your advice?
I think the simplest piece of advice is go for it. You don't need anybody's permission to try something, you know, to try something new. And if you're, you know, you might just have a couple of friends that have got a similar feeling, similar ambition, just go for it. Just, you know, put your heads together, come up with a plan, see if anybody else wants to join you, and just do it. If it works, even if it's just two or three of you doing something and it works and you come back buzzing, other people think, oh, that sounds good. I'd like a piece of that. Can I join? Can I come next time? And that's how things happen. That's how Outdoor Lads happened, a group of people starting things informally. And things like, you know, constitutions and funding and all that kind of malarkey follows much, much later on. And it would be such a shame if people let worries about having organised you know, groups or charities or whatever get in the way of actually starting something. Just do it.
So what's next? What does the future look like?
I think what's next really is coming out of the COVID pandemic. I mean, let's face it, it's been a pretty miserable year on many, many fronts, and it's desperately affected people's abilities to, you know, to get outdoors. So as a group, we're very much focused now on getting as many events up and running to get people back outdoors within the government guidelines and, of course, the advice that we get from bodies like BMC and Sport England. I'm really pleased amongst our leaders, we've managed to get over 100 events in those first couple of weeks after the 29th of March on our website so that people all over the country can get out in small groups. And that's a way of rebuilding the group, because the group individuals have suffered. People have been stuck indoors. I'm lucky I live in the North York Moors. I can shove my boots on. I disappear with a dog, with my partner, and you know, I can have a fantastic day out. Most people don't have that kind of luxury. So people's mental health has suffered. We need to get doing that for individuals, for the members of our groups. We found that our membership has dropped somewhat during the pandemic, because people are paying an annual subscription. If they feel they can't get out, why would they pay the subscription? I get that. So the sooner we get more and more events, and especially ones that people pay for, like the hostel events, camping events and so on, where there's a small premium that people pay that helps to support financially Outdoor Lads, we need to get those back up and running as well, which we've got loads in the pipeline. And then people can enjoy a much wider experience with Outdoor Lads, and then we can go from strength to strength, and you know, get our membership up from the current 1300 back up to well over 2000 where it used to be, and who knows, the sky's the limit.
Brilliant, thank you so much, Chris. Should we finish off with our quick fire questions?
So Rob, there are 10 questions that we ask every guest on Finding Our Way. Are you ready?
Deep breath, go on, let's go for it.
Quick fire questions. Describe yourself in three words.
Adventurous. Contours. Unusual word to use to describe yourself. Hungry. I'm always hungry. For food, for adventure. Yeah.
What's your favourite mountain snack?
It would have to be homemade cake. You can't beat a slab of homemade cake when you get to a summit. It's got to be the good thing. I mentioned earlier about the events that we go on. People often make cakes to bring along. So having somebody's homemade cake on a mountaintop is just magical.
Particular flavour or any will do?
Anything, as long as it's got lots of fat and sugar in it, that's all that matters.
Brilliant. Best mountain memory?
Well, I mentioned earlier the Schiehallion experience. That's got to be up there. Reaching even Ben Nevis for the first time was pretty special, knowing you're on the highest point of the British Isles. But there's loads and loads and loads.
Bucket list destination?
I suppose there's two things I really want to do in the next couple of years or so. I've always wanted to do the Southwest Coast Path. No mountains involved, but the sheer length of it is 630 odd miles, and the ups and downs you do is the equivalent of climbing Everest nearly four times. Obviously not with the snow, ice and thin air, but it is a challenge. That is something I want to do in 1 7-week blitz. And that one I mentioned earlier, going from west to east of Scotland, Ardnamurchan Point across to Peterhead, across all the mountains in the Cairngorms and so on, will be a magical thing to do.
How often do you get lost?
I can honestly say not very often. There'll be plenty of times I think, I can't pinpoint myself exactly, but it's usually fairly quick to get back and know, you know, within minutes exactly where I am. And if I'm honest, I probably get lost more in Morrisons than I do on mountains.
Rob, are you funny?
Well, I hope so. I hope there's a bit of humour there, because that's part of the leadership thing, isn't it? You know, you want to bring people with you. You want to have a laugh and a joke, you know. Sad if you don't.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
This is easy. I'd have to be a Jack Russell. I take Scylla, our Jack Russell, on my camping and hiking trips, and she loves going up mountains. So I'd be a Jack Russell if I had to be something else.
And one thing, apart from Scylla, that you always carry on the hill?
That would have to be the memories of my mum and dad, because that was the inspiration behind it. My mum always used to love me telling her about the experiences of my Outdoor Lads adventures, you know, mountain tops, watching the sunset from the top of a mountain, the wildlife I see. She used to absolutely love that. And my dad was always quite proud of it, although he would never articulate it. So even though they're both gone, taking their memory with me is really, really important.
Oh, thank you.
What does walking mean to you?
It's about feeling totally, totally free. And in a world where there's so much, I'm tempted to say crap, if that's not too strong a word, it's nice to feel so insignificant at times when you're out there, either alone or with a group, in the middle of nowhere, you can feel insignificant, and it's wonderful.
And lastly, Rob, we want more of you and Outdoor Lads. Where do we go?
The best route to access us is through the internet and our website at outdoorlads.com. So Outdoor Lads is one word, of course. Of course, in this day and age, social media, so you can also find us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram with a quick search.
Brilliant, thank you. And we'll make sure we've got all those hashtags and social media connections included with the info. Thank you so much, Rob. It's
thank
been
you,
great
Rob,
talking with
and
you.
And the outdoor lads, yeah.
I've really enjoyed it.
Here's to a summer of freedom.
And fun.
Absolutely.
And fun.
We all
and
deserve
adventure.
It. We all deserve it. And cake.
Thank you, lovely listeners, for listening. Let's grow this thing. If you want more of Finding Our Way, then subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Share the podcast with your friends and your networks. And do let us know what you think. Use @TeamBNC on Instagram and Twitter and the hashtag FindingOurWay.
See you on the next one.
Bye-bye. Finding Our Way is brought to you by the British Mountaineering Council and is proudly supported by Berghouse. It's produced and presented by Cress Allwood and me, Marianne O'Hotter. It's edited by Chris Stone and the artwork was designed by Neil Arch. Follow us on your podcast app so you don't miss an episode and join the conversation on social with the hashtag Finding Our Way.